Michael Goudeau, sitting across from me. And very, very special guest. You have yet another aristocrat. For those of you keeping score at home, and who isn't, we've had Lisa Lampanelli, David Brenner, Wendy Liebman, Gilbert Gottfried, Paul Provenza, Bobby Slayton, Carrot Top, and now Howie Mandel, yet another aristocrat.
Yes.
And the person who in the aristocrats used the word that many people consider to be the most offensive, the most.
I did?
Yes, you did.
I didn't know I hold the record.
Yeah, you hold the record. You're a big deal. And you're the nice guy. You're the TV nice guy superstar.
Yes.
And you're the one who used the word, the C word, that bothers everybody so much. You just couldn't stop using it.
Because I can. Speaking of the C word. But I didn't know that I used it more than anybody else.
Yeah, you're the winner.
No, you edited it more than anybody else, right?
Okay, that's
other
a big
people,
difference.
Yes.
Well, we couldn't even find, you know, there weren't two sentences in a row where you didn't use it.
Because you come, and I think people know that, you came to wherever we were, and that's how I am at home.
Exactly, with the kids.
Yes.
That's where we are.
That's where we are today. We're in your home,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. With the
this
kids.
Is amazing. What a setup you have here.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to do it, to work at home.
Do people who listen to this show know that this is your home?
I think I've said that a few times, yeah.
I'm actually in the home. His wife just delivered a sandwich.
She runs out and gets sandwiches.
She's good. She's almost good. There's three of us here. One sandwich was delivered. So she serves, but just not everyone. Yeah. And there's a lot of you guys are on computers.
We're on a lot of computers. I have too many computers.
What are you guys actually looking at?
Now, I'm looking at my email, and I'm looking at some other stuff to see if calls are coming in and stuff, you know, emails and things.
All right, let's
do you want me to close it? Would be more comfortable?
No. Obviously, no calls are coming in. This was a telethon, this would be horrible, but it's not. Yeah.
Doing very, very badly, because I'm talking to you. Now, we decided, I want to talk to you about, because when is the new season of Deal or No Deal starts?
September 18th starts up again. It's a huge, you have no idea how huge this has become.
It's a monster hit.
It's a monster hit. A show that I didn't want to do.
They forced you?
I got forced by my wife. They called me. I got a phone call, and my manager called me up and said, you know, NBC is calling and they want you to host a game show. I said, there's no way. Goodbye. And that was, because, as you know, in this business, as being a comedian, I just thought that would be the nail in the coffin for this career. I would never, you know, not that Pat Sajak is probably a wonderful guy, but not a lot of people buy tickets to see him live, right? So, and then they called back and they said, would you like me to explain it? Can I just explain the show so I feel like I've done my part? And I said, fine. And he said, we're going to have there's 26 cases held by 26 hot, you know, Maxim models or gorgeous girls. And somebody just picks a case. There's no rules. There's nothing. I said, you know what? It sounds like a great show that I'll watch. I'll watch it. There's 26 hotties. I'll watch it, but I really don't want to do it. And then he called me back like 10 minutes later and said, you know, the guy just wants to spend an hour with you. Can he spend an hour with you and just pitch you?
What's the cost to spend an hour with Howie Mandel?
That's what I said, but it was going to cost. It was going to cost. I said, I'm going to, you know, the Valley in L.A. I was going to Jerry's Deli.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I'm going to Jerry's Deli. If he wants to join me and pay for the sandwich, I'm more than happy. I was going by myself anyway. So it won't look.
Get a free sandwich.
I'll get a free sandwich, and I won't look as bad publicly. To be sitting, it's kind of sad to see a guy at Jerry's by himself with a pastrami sandwich. Yeah. So I said it'll just look good for it.
Now, you know, when Marlon Brando, in order to read a script, you had to send $1 million to Marlon Brando that he would put in escrow for the amount of time it took him to read the script. And then if he said no, he sent it back to you. But he had interest that whole time, and it proved you'd get the money together. Did you do something like that? It was just a pastrami sandwich for you.
Had I known that story, I would have. But Marlon Brando gets $1 million, I get a pastrami sandwich.
Sure.
Yes.
And that seems almost just with the world.
Well, to any Jew, a pastrami sandwich worth $1 million.
Exactly.
It is.
Exactly. And in this case, you've proven it.
I have.
So what was the pitch that made you change
your mind? I actually thought it was a joke. The guy shows up. This guy, Rob Smith, he's with the company Endemol, which is the production company.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in Jerry's. I'm eating my sandwich. He shows up, and this guy is carrying a little, he's got a laptop. Uh-huh. Not unlike yours. And he has a bag, and he's carrying a paper bag, a rumpled paper bag filled with I didn't know what. And he's got an art card he had made. It looked like an 8-year-old had done a school project. He had drawn, he'd sectioned it off into 26 different sections. And he sits down on my table, and he moves my sandwich and my soup away. He puts down his card, and he opens his bag, and he had made little cases, little suitcases. They weren't suitcases, but the amount of money, cut little cards, and he put them out on the card, and he opened his lap. laptop, which I found out later was, you know, the whole show is based on a mathematical equation. That's how they come up with the offers, but that's how he was going to work it out. Mm-hmm. And he tells me to start playing, and I thought it was a joke. I was waiting for one of my friends to come around the corner. It was
It
was a real bad pitch. I mean, it was just, you would think, because my manager had called me and said, you know, NBC's really excited about the show.
But how do you get excited, though? I mean, it seems like the whole show is you, right?
Well,
and a lot of money. It's Howie Mandel with a lot of money. But the game itself, is there something in the pitch of that? How could NBC be excited about that before you were involved?
Well, the answer to that question is it's in 65 countries, and it's huge. It's a phenomenon. The guy that does it in Italy was offered $100 million by the Prime Minister of Italy, or the President of Italy, to not play anymore because it was knocking... What's his name? He owns Vivendi. You know the guy who's the President of Italy?
I know nothing.
He owns Universal. The guy who... Anyway, his main money is out of broadcasting. He owns a station in Italy, which had the number one primetime programming. And when Deal or No Deal came out, it was knocking his programming off.
What's the name in Italy? Do you know the Italian for it?
No, I know the host. Howie is Pupo.
Pupo.
Yes. So they showed me. They actually showed me a tape of Pupo, but I'll talk about that in a second. But it was huge because of the success of this. So they were very excited. But I thought, if they're so excited and this is a huge international success, you know, you would think the proposal would be more than this guy with a $2 art card and a paper bag. I was sure this was a joke.
But it worked.
Hello.
You took the gig.
What are you waving at?
I'm trying to get the sound turned on for your crew in the house.
There's no sound turned on?
There is now, yeah.
Yeah, there's now. Everything's okay.
It's not important.
But that pitch worked for you? I mean,
no, it didn't. So you know, I played the game, and I picked a card, and I picked one that had, you know, I didn't know what was in my card, you know, what the amount was in my card, and he's opening other cards, and then he makes me offers, not real offers. You know, I'll give you $100,000 to sell back the card, and we're pretending at the table, and I go, okay, this is fun. Are there any rules? Why do you need me? What is it? He goes, and just watch this tape. And he gave me the tape to watch it in Italian. I watched it in Italian.
Football.
I didn't understand what was going on, but you understand, you know, take the lira, and I'm screaming at the TV, take the lira, and I realized that I could have fun with this. And he said, the reason we want you, there are no rules. I have no boundaries. I can, if I want to create drama, I could create drama. If I want to create tension, I can create tension. If I want to be funny in the moment, I can go anywhere in the audience. I could talk to a loved one. I could talk to them. There are no boundaries. I'm not standing in a suit behind a podium just reading trivia
and
questions.
The choice is always A-B, right? Just A-B.
Deal or no deal.
Yeah.
It's always just, and that's the simplest, and now I have like 5-year-olds walking up to me who say they watch the game, 85-year-olds who watch the game. You don't have to be, you can be a moron and change your name, change your life, you know, just by answering one question. And it's fascinating study in human nature.
And what's the smallest amount of money someone's walked away with?
$5. And there's no reason for anybody to walk away with $5.
They didn't understand the game?
It's just stupid to walk away with $5. There is no reason our show...
We did the Hollywood Square several times.
Right.
And we had people who could have won who took the wrong square. You know, they had two in a row. They had to go for the third square. Either they hated the celebrity so much, and they re-explained the rules. You understand you're trying to get three in a row. Don't you want to go for, you know, Whoopi Goldberg? No, I want to go for it. It's just insane.
You know what? But they got... So then you can chalk that up to, you know, I got mixed up and the excitement of television. On our show, you know, it's the board is right in front... Well, so it is on Hollywood Squares, but the board is right... The board is right in front of you. And I say to you, you know, you've told me. You tell me your life story. You know, I'm in debt. I've never owned a home. I have 3 children. Mm-hmm. And I say to you, I'm offering you, the banker's offering you $250,000.
Right.
And you have to open up 3 more cases if you don't take it. There's only 1 more case with a huge amount. Granted, that's $1 million. But you have to open 3 more cases. There's only 1 more case. And you adamantly look at me and go, I'll show him. No deal. I look at I want to shake. I want to throttle them. I want to swear at them.
They know it's $5?
They don't know what they have.
Okay.
They don't know what they have. But they know they do have $250,000 as soon as I offer you that money.
Right.
But it's the same mentality that works right here in Vegas. You know, people feel that and that's why they hand you chips.
Yeah.
Because it's not cash.
Sure.
It's not your money. And once you win thousands of chips, people go, well, I'm playing with their money. No, they handed it to you. It's your money.
So in fairness to the idiot, they could have had $1 million and they said no deal.
They could have had $1 million.
They might have had it in their case.
Yeah.
They might have had $1 million, but they definitely had $250,000.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, there must be a lot of mathematical sites now covering the deal or no deal Howie Mandel thing, because there's all that stuff about the Monty Hall question.
What's that?
It's a complicated mathematical thing. But if you have Monty Hall, you know, let's make a deal.
Right.
You've got three possibilities.
Right.
If you pick one.
Right.
Okay, and you've got two that are no good, one that's great. If you pick one, and then they show you one that's not good, do you change your mind or do you stay the same? Now, most people will tell you, intuitively, that it doesn't matter if you change your mind, that the odds are exactly the same. It's still 1 in 3. But in truth, you're getting more information into the system, and you actually have a better chance if you change your mind.
I didn't know that.
Yes, it's a complicated thing. And that's the kind of thing you're dealing with here.
It's much simpler. It's much simpler. Because even if there's $1 million, a possibility, if you have a 1 in 3 chance of opening up the $1 million, you have a 100% chance of taking $250,000.
Exactly, yeah.
There's no, the odds are, take $250,000. Don't go, if you have to open up three more cases, mm-hmm. you know, we call it on our show the safety net. If you have to open up two cases, and there's two large amounts, you may want to go for it. That's like the edge, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have two cases to open and there's only one amount larger,
mm-hmm.
then the odds are against you.
Yeah. Now, do you ever, you don't ever know what's in the boxes, right?
Never.
Because they can't read you. There's no tells. There's no nothing.
No, I don't know.
It's you don't know anything.
I don't know if you've ever been part of like a game show that hides the there is an amount someplace, or
yeah.
even like Let's Make a Deal. I had no idea, but since that game show fraud,
$64,000 question.
Yeah, it's become there's a, like a I think the FBI instated, but they did.
I know they did. Yeah, they did.
The FBI instated a special. There are special laws.
Well, you have to understand, Howie. There's no other crime in this country, so they have to really look at what they've got to work on.
You have no idea how crazy this is. There are armed guards. There's a third party. There's a case in another room that is has the 26 cases in it,
uh-huh.
and they randomize those cases, the amounts in a sealed room,
mm-hmm.
and with an armed guard. And then those 26 cases are sealed. It's like something from your act.
Yeah.
The 26 cases are sealed into a rolling case, and the rolling case is brought out with armed guards to the back and given to our 26 models. If one of those models is handed a case backstage and should trip, and a case opens, and somebody backstage sees there's $5 in one case,
yeah.
the show shuts down for an hour and a half. They have to re-randomize all the cases, take them with those armed guards back into a room and redo it.
How often do Maxim models fall down?
You have no idea. So many cases. They fall.
See, that's what I'd watch for. If you did a show that just was called Models Falling Down, I would never miss it.
You have no idea how many times that happens. What I learned, and I have no military experience, but apparently if you lock your knees, if you stand at attention for any amount of time, you cut off blood circulation uh-huh. to your head. So I can't tell you how many times they're standing in that model position, and I'll be talking to a contestant, and I'll be going, you know, it's $250,000, you want a home, you hear a scream, a crash, and then there's a model upside down with an open case and a thong.
That's the greatest thing in the world.
It's
you
the
have
best
video
part of
this?
We do have video.
That's where you're going to get rich.
Yeah.
Never mind, they're paying you $1 million a show.
Yeah.
And how many times, and I always wondered this, and I guess this is an offensive question, so I'll just ask it rhetorically. I want to ask it absolutely. But I used to watch, like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Right.
I would wonder how often the person there won more money than the salary of Regis Philbin. You know, how often that would happen, that you actually got to that point? Because he was getting paid a lot a show, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I would imagine. I don't know what he was getting paid a show, but he got a lot. How often does it happen? It happens on our show?
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah,
a lot more than I care to.
Yeah.
But I'm proud to say that the person we talked about earlier that went home with $5 did not.
Now, who won? What's the most you've ever given away?
To date, it's been, I think, $540,000. But when we start up again on the 18th of September, we're going to $6 million that week. And mathematically, it would be very simple for a bank offer to be well over $1 million. Just by the, you know, when we have $1 million in our normal play,
uh-huh.
it's not unlikely to have a $100,000 or $200,000 offer. Those happen just
so
about every game.
Every figure is completely random.
What do you mean?
I mean, when you take $1 million you're giving away, it's split up the 26 ways in random amounts, or it's always the same amount? Is there always a case that has $640,000 or something like that?
No, that's not how it's put. The case is there's 26 different
right.
amounts from one penny to a million.
Right.
The offers are, it's based on odds.
Right.
It has nothing
right.
to do with what's in the case.
But I mean, what the amount that's in the case,
right.
How are those amounts from the one penny to...
They're always exactly the same,
okay,
and then somehow,
right.
and then somehow when they make an amount $6 million...
it all goes up.
No, there's still $0.01, $50. There's just the last three, they change. Oh. And I don't know. I'm not a math whiz, but they only change the last three. So sometimes, I don't know when, if I know there's going to be $6 million. I don't know if there'll be a $5 million and a $1 million. There might be a $6 million and the $1 million, or a $6 million and $2.5 million, and then as we do...
Now, the figure $6 million has nothing to do with you being Jewish, right? Just a little kind of conspiracy thing. The elders of Zion said, let's remind them, never forget. Let's make the amount that Howie's doing $6 million.
If the $6 million are knocked out in the first round,
yeah, exactly.
Then that would be uncanny. That would be wrong. But we must never forget.
We'd never forget.
If the $6 million stay in for the entire game, it's kind of a redemption, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. Yes. So that's really why you took the gig. You never answered that question, though. We've left you at Jerry's Deli with pastrami sandwich, your soup where you can't reach it, and a really lousy pitch that you've said no to.
Okay.
Then where's it go?
Okay, then it goes, I went off on a tangent, didn't I?
That's fine.
It is okay. So I said no. He said, just watch this tape. And I went home and I watched Pupo with my wife. Pupo.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't watch Pupo with their wife?
No, and it just made me laugh. It made me scream. I mean, Pupo is in the Italian way, very dramatic, you know. Uh-huh. He would take an offer, and I didn't know what was happening, and then he would turn toward the contestant, and you'd see a tear in the corner of his eye come down his cheek, and the audience would go crazy, and I thought, this is hysterical. And then he would pace for an hour. Then you'd see the person scream and buckle under the pressure of wanting to know how many lira. And then he'd say something funny, and then he'd sing a little song. And I thought, this was a great forum where all the different things I've done in my career I can do. I can act dramatically like I did on St. Elsewhere. I could be the talk show host I was in my daytime talk show to flesh out who they are, and I could be the comedian that I love being. And I said, it might be fun. It's huge. And my wife said, you idiot. You're not doing anything right now. Why don't you just do this? And I thought it would be this one-off. We would do these five shows that would air in December.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I taped. I went there to... I said yes to them, and they took me down to Television City at CBS. That's where we taped the first shows, you know, down by the Grove, where they did the Carol Burnett show and all. And the guy that invented he's from Denmark, this guy Dick, invented the show. He's very particular about how you word the show, and he played it with me. He took me in the basement, and he had these cards, nicer cards than the guy at Jerry's.
Well, you've gone through another level.
Yes, and he played it with me 1,000 times over and over. And I said, you know, there's five big numbers left, and he'd go, Howie, you don't say numbers, You say amounts. There's five amounts left, and everything, you know, he added, and I was just getting killed. I just thought, I phoned my wife. I go, what did you get me into? This is horrible. And the first day they brought in an audience. They brought in an audience for like a test show. Huh? And I saw the audience, and these people didn't want to be there. It wasn't Deal or No Deal, meant nothing to anybody, mm-hmm. you know. And you've been to a million tapings yourself, where they just they wrangle, you know, tourists who've been to every other place, and they came in, and they were on the edge of their seats, and they were screaming. And I said, maybe we have something here. I have no idea what this is, but this is kind of fun, and I'm having fun. And we taped in 2 days. We taped the five shows, and then I got so scared, I left the country. I thought when it aired, I'm either going to be humiliated, or this is the end of my career. And I flew to. We went to South America. I was in Venezuela when it aired, and the people on my agents and my manager on my BlackBerry, they kept sending me these ratings, and they were going through the roof.
There you go.
Nobody was more surprised than me.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with one of the aristocrats from Deal or No Deal, Howie Mandel, on the Free FM. It's Penn Jillette with Michael Goodell. We'll talk to him more after this.
Food service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
A message from Dr. C. Everett Koo.
Call it addiction or drug dependence. I call it a public health crisis. Heroin and other opioid drugs continue to destroy lives. But it's not just heroin. Prescription painkillers can be just as addictive. It can happen to anyone. Now there is new hope for people with this long-term disease. If you or someone you know is addicted to heroin or painkillers, medical treatment is available in a doctor's office.
For more information, call 866-287-2728.
Auto Scoop with Adam Goldfein. He's your inside guy, and he will tell you what you need to know before going to make that purchase.
Saturdays, 10 till noon on 105.9 WCKG.
Hey, it's Opie and Anthony.
The virus spreads to Chicago mornings
6 to 9
on 105.9 WCKG, Chicago's Free FM.
Penn Jillette on 105.9 WCKG, Chicago's Free FM.
Yeah, this is Penn Jillette here on Free FM with Howie Mandel, one of the aristocrats and the star of Deal or No Deal, the American Pupo. Isn't that what you're advertised as?
I think I'm I think Howie is Pupo in Italian.
And Goudeau, sitting across from here, is playing Deal or No Deal.
I've chosen a case.
On NBC, NBC.com?
Yeah.
Yes. It's addictive. People tell me they're addicted. See that? So what has happened here? They can see. Can they see that if they're watching this?
There's no way, no.
No, NBC.com. So you go, you press game, and it actually comes up. The game board comes up. It's a lot of fun. I started playing it, and then I realized it's a lot of fun even without me.
Now, I wanted to ask you, there's a lot of things in magic called forces and magician's choices where you are sitting with someone and they've picked what you want them to pick.
Right.
And then you have to say to them, do you want to change your mind in a way that will make sure they don't change their mind, but that you can remind them that they had a free choice. And your trick will not work if they change their mind. There's a lot of stuff done in close-up like that.
Right.
And there's a few places in our show where I offer somebody a free choice to show that nothing's fixed. And they have, and there's no magic to it. It is a completely 100% free choice. But because my background is magic, I always try to learn different ways to force something when I don't need to. Like when you ask someone to think of a card, if you do that enough, you can keep a chart of what people are apt to think of, and you can increase your chances. Do you play games with yourself while you're doing it of going, I really want the person to take the money this time, or I really don't want them to?
You know, in my mind, I do.
That's right. I don't mean that anybody knows this. I just mean for your own
Because
amusement.
Truthfully, you know, first and foremost, as you know, I'm a human being, and I'm a parent, and I'm a husband, and I'm a father, and when I'm looking at these people's eyes, you know, and you know, I could put myself in their positions, most of them. And if they're not taking the money, and I think it's ridiculous, I mean, there is no way for me, or if you are watching the show and you see that I sway somebody that way, that is exactly what NBC would not want me to do and they would fire me for. So I try to word things so that it's, I have to show them the other side of the coin.
Sure.
But I see that you can possibly sway somebody with your words, but I would never do that, could never do that, and should never do that.
Right.
But I think it's fascinating because when I didn't mean to, they may make a decision, and then they'll tell me after, well, when you showed me this.
Yeah,
but I didn't mean that. So I realized the power of...
That's what I'm talking about. You know, in a magic trick, you very much have to sway somebody without, let's put it in terms you all understand, without NBC knowing. You know, the audience cannot think you're swaying them in any way,
right.
But you have to find a way to be persuasive. And you must have learned stuff about that. You must have learned, have you learned anything about, like, your kids and your wife, of giving them a choice where you can kind of push them one way, goose it a little bit without them noticing?
You know, I think as a salesman, I started off as a salesman. I was in the carpet business many years before before I started this, I saw there are ways that you can make something sound more enticing if that's the direction you want somebody to go. But on this show, that is the rule. I will never make something sound more enticing. But what they want for gameplay, and I think it's important, is even if you see somebody leaning a certain way, they're going to go for the deal. It behooves me, it behooves the whole audience and the entertainment value of the show to say, okay, you're going to take the deal, I'm offering you $200,000. And even if I believe that that's right, I want to show you how tempting the other side could be.
Sure. What you're actually doing is people are tuning in to see you torture human beings who desperately need money and you have
it. It's really like bowling for food. It really is a torture. It is torturesome. You know, and everybody who comes on our show says, you know what, this is so easy, I've been watching at home, and I told myself, if I ever get to this point, there's ever $100,000 on the table, we're just going to run. If there's ever two cases to open and only one large amount left, we're going to run. And then they get to that point, and it's not only me, it's the torture of being in front of a live audience, that excitement. Seeing that number psychologically in front of them, still available to them, will never be available again. What are the chances in life that somebody's going to give you a 1 out of 3 chance of having $1 million? You can be at any lottery. You could be in any hotel here in Las Vegas.
It'll never
happen again.
Right.
And those are the kind of statements that I have to make. Because that's what, you know, I want to lay that out not only for the contestant, for the people at home.
But also it's supposed to be a game and not a job. You know, you're supposed to be having fun and not going, what's my absolute ultimate way to make money on this? Presumably, you're there to also have a good time in the game.
Presumably.
Yeah.
But the point is that, you know, unless you're walking away with a lot of money, and most people do, I think they take it way, well, I was going to say too seriously. It's a life-changing decision.
Sure, of course it is. Yeah.
So they either destroy their life or their relationship. I mean, there's a guy named Sammy who you should have on the show. Uh-huh. And Sammy is one of our production people. Uh-huh. And he's the guy that's in charge of bringing the people from the airport to the show and then from the show to the airport.
Oh,
and the stories he has and the camera that should be put in that van, there's the show.
Yeah.
Because he has told me about the fights, he believes the breakups of marriages that have happened. I mean, people are making decisions. I mean, it's heartbreaking to know what happens with one little two words, no deal.
It's nice to know you're in charge of it.
Well, I like to feel that I am really fair and I am giving you both sides of the coin.
Sure.
And there is no swing.
Sure.
But what
you're just following orders, aren't you, Harry?
When you really ruin
people's lives.
You're making me feel really good. You know, I'm a Jew, and the guilt is already there.
I know.
And you're just stirring it up.
And I'm a Gentile. I know how to use that.
Yes. That's me.
We have freedom.
I'm being persecuted once
again. The same relationship has always existed.
Yes.
It's just amazing. Now, you, I'm from New England.
Right.
So I very much don't like to be touched. And you're a psychotic germaphobe,
right,
so you
OCD.
Don't like to be touched. Don't people grab you when they win a lot of money?
You know, my biggest issue is just shaking hands. I have OCD, which uh-huh. doesn't make any sense if you know anything about obsessive compulsive
yeah.
disorder. It's just about the handshake. I can actually hug,
uh-huh.
and I can do other things. It's just like I have certain little issues.
Yeah.
It's just a hand. You know, I count. I do other
and
little
if you're,
things.
And if you're in a men's room and no one else is going out, you never leave, right?
In a men's room, if you see me in a public restroom, it's if you're a big fan of Cirque du Soleil and you don't want to buy a ticket, follow me into a public restroom. Because it's like an act from Cirque du Soleil. I can open things with my feet, turn things with my elbows, twist, tear paper off, get a door open.
But, I mean, do you wait for someone to open the door before you leave?
Usually, but then everybody does. It's not my trick, but you can take paper, right? I'll take
sure.
paper and open the handle and then drop the paper, and I lit it.
But don't people like, lick you and grab you? And
nobody licks, but the people grab me, and I have... You know, it's very funny. The other night, I do this thing. What? You have a licking story?
Well, the only reason we were setting up lips is our next question, but finish this and we'll go.
Okay, but you know, I thought I brilliantly came up with a remedy for my handshaking was the fist. You know, I do the pound, the fist. So the other day I'm in the casino, I'm playing here at the MGM, and some guy walks up to me and he extends his hand to shake my hand. I go, really, you know, just make the fist and we'll do the pound. He goes, you can't shake my hand. What are you worried about? I got germs. I go, no, it's just me. I'm a little nutty. If you don't mind it, otherwise, you know, just do the pound. He goes, all right. And he makes a fist and he pounds my fist, and I've never had this before, but his fist was just wet, and there's a stickiness. There was like a sticky
splash.
I screamed like a little girl. I screamed.
Well, you know, Jay Leno is the opposite of that. If you're ever out in public with Jay Leno, people come up who are clearly lepers, you know, vomiting on their hands, and then go, hey, Jay, and Jay just sticks out his hand, shakes their hand, and then he'd be willing to lick it afterward. I mean, he just has no phobia at all.
Nothing.
I was out, and I'll shake hands with anybody, I'll do anything, you know, when people come up and talk to me, but Jay Leno is another whole level. You can go up to him and say, would you service me orally? And he goes, oh, sure. You know, just anything you want from Jay.
But he'll go out sick. You know, I've been to the show and his voice is gone.
Yeah,
and he's,
yeah.
he's filled in, and I go, what is it? He's just a touch of the bird flu. It's nothing.
Yeah,
he'll work through that.
But the reason I asked you about licking
yes.
is that you have worked with someone that we have both worked with,
our dear friend,
and we know as a friend, and that is Peter Potofsky. And everybody that knows Peter Potofsky, we love to talk to him about it. He was on your Sea Monkey show.
He
right?
was on the Sea Monkey show, and where is he now?
He's back in New York, as far as I know.
He's back in
New York. He was in Switzerland for a long time.
Can he still?
He still does the 108 to his butt. Yeah.
Man, that guy kills himself. He's the neatest guy. He's just a great guy, isn't he? He's also he can't read, right? He's dyslexic.
He reads a little bit.
Very little. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just
great clown though, Peter Potofsky. Yeah.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance, he used to travel with Bob Nelson, didn't he? Him
yeah,
and Bob
I think
Nelson.
He's back working with Bob now.
Yeah.
And he also the reason that was
what does licking have to do with?
I'll tell you, when he worked New York,
right?
He had to have in his contract. He was not allowed to lick anybody because he used to, every time
lick.
He saw a man with a
head.
Bald head, he would grab the side of their head
yes, he did
and
that.
Lick his whole head all
right.
over.
Right.
And he did that to some big cheese at New York. And his contract added the no licking clause.
No lick.
What I love about Peter Potofsky is, what show did you say you saw? How are we on with Peter?
Arsenio Hall?
Yes.
Peter's out there flipping around in the sea monkey outfit, and you and Arsenio are hiding behind the desk. Because that's just a... Peter is such a nut.
Such a crazy...
So he's flipping and throwing chairs.
Than any human being. What is he, like 1,000 push-ups every morning?
Yeah, he's
it's
crazy.
It's just insane
now.
Like that. You know, when we did it, we did a few shows with him and stuff, and we'd have to have Godot there as kind of a keeper, because Godot could, like, you know...
I was in the circus with Peter for 2 years in Ringling, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I lived next door.
He is amazing. He's amazing. He's the nicest guy. Jay used to use him a lot. I remember Jay, and he'd always be an audience
member. Yeah, the man who fell into the Grand Canyon and survived.
Right, and he'd fall down the stairs. He's just a great guy.
And Jay also, whenever you're around Peter Podofsky, you're kind of protecting your elbows and your knees and make sure you don't take a fall. So it's great to see Peter Podofsky come out with Jay and have Jay, like, move away and protect himself. And when I did one bit with Peter Podofsky, he said to me afterwards, "You're the only person I've ever been performing with who didn't cower."
Is that what he said to you?
Yeah, he said to me, he said, "You don't seem afraid of me." And I said, "I'm desperately afraid of you, but I don't think it's good for my image for 6'6", 280-pound man to run away like a little girl." But I was always so sure he was going to cripple me. I knew he was going to cripple himself. That didn't bother me very much.
I'm just glad that I haven't seen him in a few years, because I didn't remember the fact that the bald head took
him.
Oh, yeah. And how he's going to come after you.
Coming after you. You better run.
You have no contract. You have no contract that says he can't.
I don't like that. And that's not even, that's beyond the OCD. I think that if
I didn't have hair, actually, I think I don't want a very, very small set of circumstances I like to be licked. And then I like it very, very much. But outside of that small little box, deal or no deal, where you're going to lick me, I'd probably often go no deal. I'll stop right here on upper thigh.
It's just a small little box?
Outside of that conceptual this small little box.
Oh, it's conceptual.
It's a conceptual.
You're broadcasting
small
this. There's just one huge area that I will get licked. And then beyond that huge area.
That's a better way to put it.
Yes, it's radio.
But someone licking my whole face or head, no. Very, very small number of situations.
There's no reason. My wife is an animal lover, and she lets the dogs. I love the road. And they tell me this story. I mean, I've heard this a million times. You know, their tongue is so much cleaner.
Oh, no, it's not. It's a level of clean.
Well, to be honest with you, that's my phobia. I assume that's what everybody's doing anyhow. That's why I won't shake hands.
And you're right. You're right most of the time. Yeah, pet lovers are disgusting. And we'll talk more about that right after this. This is Pet Gillette at Free FM with Howie Mandel of Deal or No Deal. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette, same with Michael Godot. We're talking to Howie Mandel of A Deal or No Deal.
Is that you?
Yeah, I'm playing the bass.
Yeah.
I love playing the upright. That's me playing with Mike Jones there. If you want to go to PennRadio.com, you can find a lot of Mike Jones, and some of them with him playing just piano, solo piano, which is astonishing. It's fabulous.
I'm going to do that. And unlike Godot here, who went, I sent to NBC.com to play Deal or No Deal, and I said, it's addictive. And he goes, yeah, I just played one. Now you play.
You know, I'm inherently competitive. I just wanted to make sure I could do better than the host of the game show.
How did you do on Deal or No Deal?
I took a deal at 77,000 with four cases left.
Now, are the is that good? Is that a good 77,000?
What's the average? What's the average people walk away?
I don't know, but isn't that good? $77,000. If somebody would walk away any place with $77,000,
seems
okay.
I think it's good. But we've had people that are you can't console who have $25,000, $30,000, and they lost everything because they had the chance at $1 million. They lost the chance at $1 million, and all of a sudden, $35,000 seems like nothing to them.
How do they pick? Do people write in and want to be on the show? How do they choose them?
People will send in also through NBC.com. People will send in videos. People will send in letters, and they have throughout America. They'll have. I know there's some big ones here in Vegas, and they'll have people will line up for hours, and they'll test and play. I don't know what's involved in becoming this show. Unlike any other show I've ever done, I have no involvement in. I'm the last guy to show up. I show up and I have no responsibility but host the show, and I have no, which is wonderful. I'm just having the time of my life. It's a very easy game. It's a simple game. I just have a good time. I play the game and I go home. Sometimes I actually do feel bad. A lot of times I feel devastated for these people who make ridiculous decisions.
But. Now, what comments do you get when the producer runs over during the commercial break and says, Howie, they tell you, they give any notes or anything, or they just say you're doing great and move on?
No, you know what? They'll tell me, okay, you know, we have their long-lost sister who's coming in the next round. So they'll, I don't know if you saw this one, but there was somebody who said, you know, what would my sister do? That was what she was basing every decision. This is, I look up to my older sister, but my sister couldn't be here. She's in Boston and she's going through med school. These are her finals. And then her supporter was her mom. And the mom says, you know, my other little girl who's great couldn't be here, but what would they do? And take no deal, honey. And they would take no deal. And then the producer comes up to me and says, you know, do we go to commercial? And the producer says, we got her sister. We took her sister, we flew them in, unbeknownst to the people.
We destroyed her med school.
Yes, probably.
She's been thrown out.
Probably.
So, got a fake infraction, so she's been thrown out of med school so she can be here for our stupid show.
It's worth it.
Sure, of course it is.
TV.
It's show business.
It's much more important. So we got her sister, and we have this great idea that the sister's actually kind of attractive, so we're going to dress her up like one of the models. We're down to four cases, so when we come back from the commercial, you talk to them so they're facing this way, and then when they have to pick a case, they'll see that the case number 21 is their sister.
Okay.
And I go, great. Okay, so during the, there's a lot of melee going on, and they put the sister up in the thing, and I'm talking to the mother, and then we come back. We're back, and welcome back to Deal or No Deal. All right, you have one case to choose. One case to choose. You're at a crucial point in the game. This could change your life. You just turned down $200,000. Pick a case. And the girl turns around, and she goes, number six. And I go, well, you might want to look at all the cases before you choose the case. Yeah, she goes, well, I'm looking at all the cases. I want to choose number six. Or maybe you can ask your mother. Are you happy with six? Look at all the cases. Like, look at 21. 21's a lucky number. Do you want to look at 21? Because it's not about the case now. I just want you to see that this is a kind of a nice moment on our show. She goes, okay, 21. No, I want six. I go, well, look, you know, some people.
Does the audience know that it's a sister? No, they don't know.
No, nobody knows. Nobody knows. We know, right? Sure. We put in when it aired on the show. We put a chyron, you know, we put underneath it goes number 21 is her sister. I go, you know, some people we've had in the past will choose the women over the cases, you know, maybe you have a good feeling about the model. So let's look at all the models. Look at 21. She goes, okay. Six. I'd like to choose six. I go, wait a second. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking somebody flew in, somebody said they were this person's sister. I got a free trip out to L.A. and a free makeup and hair stylist. This is not. And I said to the mother, I said, you look at 21. She goes, I did. If my daughter says six, don't try to sway her.
Wow.
And I go, stop. Stop right now. Stop. Just look at 21. Just look at 21.
What's the sister doing?
Sister's just standing there in awe. And then finally, the slowest burn, it took forever, they go, oh, my God, that's my sister.
It's Oliver Hardy on Downs.
Yeah,
right?
It's just, like, ridiculous. And then they walk up, and the mother goes, you know, I've never seen you with your hair done like that. I mean, it's your child. This is your child. This is the person that you were basing the whole game on. This is the leader of the family.
Well, I will stick up for them. Because I have, like you have your OCD counting stuff.
Right.
I have no visual recognition at all.
Family members? You have two children.
My mother, who's now dead, my mother came up when I was playing Boston, and I didn't know she was going to be at the show.
Right.
She came up, looked me in the eye, and asked for an autograph. And I gave it to her, and she said, I'm your mother. I cannot. They did psychological testing with me. You can show me an 8x10 of somebody.
Right.
And then show me three 8x10s. One of them is that person, different pose.
Okay.
I can't recognize them.
Really?
Yeah, I would not recognize you, except that I knew I was going to see you today. So
there's two of us sitting at the table.
Oh, yeah, but I keep that in my mind. I keep that in my mind. And I'm very good with...
So my story is not that amazing.
To me, if that were me there, you could bring my sister out, and I could look right at her.
And not know it's her.
Not know it's her.
That makes no sense to me.
No, because you have good visual recognition. But can you close your eyes and picture something?
But you're a magician.
Exactly.
I would think visual recognition...
Think of how good I would be.
So sometimes you believe people have disappeared, but they're actually there.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't remember them in the scene.
You just don't recognize them.
Not at all. So I want to just stick up for the retards you had on your show. Was it then all the audience, of course, didn't even know, right?
No, when I finally said it's your sister, people screamed and couldn't believe that this family
but
was
you did
there.
Not say it's your sister before they knew. They knew for a second?
No, they didn't know.
You had to say the words, that's your sister.
To the audience. Oh, to the people.
Yeah.
I did. No. I saw some recognition come over the mother after an eternity. the recognition, the things that happen and the things that are cut out of the show. I'll tell you another funny one where somebody had this woman came. They had to cut this out of the show, but it was in the show, but not this part of the show. She picked the case, and she's playing and playing and playing, and she's turning down everything, and she's turning down everything. And then the husband says to her, "Tell Howie why you picked this case." She has number 17. And she said, "I'll be honest with you, Howie. Last night, a light came into my room. And our Lord, our Savior, Jesus Christ, sat on my bed and told me to pick number 17.
Uh-huh.
And which, right away, I'm thrilled because even as a Jew, the fact that my game's a hit if Christ is playing it.
Sure,
right?
Of course.
Right?
Sure.
I mean, that is the demographic.
Sure, that's the demographic you want.
Right. So I said, wow, that's fantastic. So I got to have the faith. I know. And, you know, like, we're offering her huge amounts, and she's going, no deal. And she's going, you got to have the faith. You got to have the faith. He told me, it's number 17, you got to have the faith. No deal. 200,000, no deal. 250, no deal. 300, no deal. And she's opening cases. You got to have the faith. And then she goes, no deal. And I go, pick one case. She opens a case, and it's $750,000 is revealed. It's gone, right?
Uh-huh.
So she goes, I'll be honest with you. I lost the faith. She takes the next deal, whatever the deal is. It went down, back down to 200. She takes $200,000, which is great. Then this is the part of the game that actually gets more ratings. The gameplay continues. Had you not taken the deal, what would your next choice have been?
Sure.
And she opens the cases and opens the cases, and it turns out her case had $1 million.
17?
Yes.
So God was right?
Yes.
God was 100% right.
Right. And she lost the faith.
There you go. There you go. You see,
man.
You see, I should have a game show on called God or No God.
Right.
We have people come on and say, you know, if there's a God, strike me by lightning. And right. They don't. You go, no God. We'll be back after this. So you got, you Jewish bastard, you got a good Christian woman to lose faith in God on TV by showing her $750,000.
See, that's what you got out of the story. I said I got her to gain faith.
Yes.
Through pain, right? She said
that's the best way.
She lost the faith, and then we showed her that was the wrong path.
So she will never, ever lose faith again.
So next time he comes, say she's playing Wheel of Fortune. And he says choose a T.
Isn't right. there a limit to how many game shows you're allowed to play, though?
I think Christ can play as many as I can.
That's one of his superpowers.
Yes.
It was loaves and fishes, right. It was water into wine, and it was play as many game shows as you want.
Right.
Have you had psychics on? People claim to be psychic?
We did have somebody who claimed to be a psychic, and I think we proved our point. I actually believe in psychics. I think this woman's power. She did leave with some money.
Everybody leaves with some money. Even right. the $5 loser.
And what I didn't tell you about the $5 at that time, and they didn't reveal on
air. $5 at that time was worth like $120, right? It was a long time ago.
In her savings account, she had $4.50. She told us before the show. So
she doubled her money.
There you go.
Yeah. That's the way. That's the spin. More than doubled her money.
That
well,
is.
How many times have you more than doubled your money in an hour?
Not on this show.
So we're going to tell us about when the show's coming back on, because now we're all jacked to see it. How come you didn't show the Jesus being right on the air? Because you're atheist Hollywood people?
I don't know why. I don't edit. I told you, I showed up. I was the last cog in the wheel. You know, as much as they wanted me, you feel that I may not have been number one on the list to host this show.
But you never found out who was. Poopo.
It could have been Poopo.
They want to bring him over.
I just know when I finally said yes, they went, you're the only one. We want you. You're the only one. You have to do this show. I went, okay, when does it start? And they went, tomorrow. I go, you don't have to build a set. It's built. Okay, well, don't you need girls? We have all the girls. Is there a direct? The lights are on. Just go over there.
We're all set. Howie Mandel, one of the aristocrats, and Deal or No Deal comes on again.
September 18th.
September 18th. Always good to see Howie Mandel. And if you see him, don't shake his hand. Don't lick his head. Don't be sweaty all around him. You don't like any of that stuff.
None of that.